If you'd like to be able to listen to the show without ads and have full access to bonus content, that's an option. To find out how, please go to BigfootEyewitness.com/podcast.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mary. If you'll remember, I was on one other show with Vic. I wanted to return to you all today and tell you another story, but first, a little bit about myself. I currently am a stay-at-home mom of one dog and one chinchilla, and I live in a very urban environment. And when I say extremely urban, I live in a big city, lots of cars, lots of noise, lots of light. So any experiences I'm having in an urban area, this is kind of the background for that. With this experience that I'm going to tell you about today, this experience happened all the way back in 2006. I believe it was between the months of April and May. It was a little cool out at night and a little warm out during the day. So very much a springtime feel. At this time in my life, I was living in a very countryside type setting, very close to woods, forest, national forest, parks, that kind of thing. So it wouldn't be unusual to just take a weekend and go on a camping trip. That is how this story starts, when myself and a few friends decided to take a camping trip that weekend, starting Friday night, and take 3 or 4 days camping and come back the next week. This was just some time off, randomly planned at the last minute. So we grabbed everything, threw it in the back of a vehicle, and we left. Of course, we do the normal things you do before most people would go camping. Fill the gas, the car with gas, get water, ice, these types of things, and we left. And at this point in time, it's after dark. Again, this was last minute planned. Probably not the smartest, but we were all really young. And so it was after dark, and I'm sitting in the back of the car, and I'm very tired. I had actually started to doze off before we got to the campsite. So we're driving a good 30, 40 minutes. And I wake up when we get to a dirt road, and we drive down this dirt road, single lane, and it's surrounded on both sides by trees, and the trees are kind of close in. So if you want to think of like a side of the road or easement, that probably wouldn't have been more than 1 or 2 feet on either side of this one lane dirt road, and then the woods. And when I'm talking woods, the woods are dense. There's a lot of shorter plants and shorter trees, shorter bushes and things that grow right up against taller trees. But none of the trees in this forest, on this road that we're driving down that I could see, were probably over about 10 feet, I would say. If that. They were probably closer to between 8 to 10, and that's the top out where the branches at the top of the tree are the tallest. So this isn't what I would consider old growth forest. And that'll make more sense here really soon. We're driving down a one-lane dirt road, and the headlights are not illuminating much, basically a little bit of road and some trees. We turn down another road, and we park. And the other road that we turn down, is, and we go down that maybe a fourth of a mile, half of a mile, and we park because the road ends. And down below us, and the ground starts to slope downward, foot or two in front of the car, and it slopes down, and there's maybe like a little bit of a very, very small gully there. Basically, it looks like there's been a lot of runoff there. The ground is a little bit exposed. There's grass there, but it's kind of beaten down, and it's an open area, a couple feet wide. Wouldn't say it's more than 8 to 10 feet wide, and it narrowed down to 4 or 5 feet wide as you went further down this sloping downward area. And there are trees that surround it on both sides. past the open area. So you've got a little gully kind of in the middle, which basically just a runoff. Some really low, short grass looks like it's been beat down or possibly mowed, but more than likely just stepped on a lot, because this is kind of a unknown to most people, but very popular to the locals, like camping spot. And so, and then you've got like about 10 feet when you first get there. So about 5 feet on this side of this little gully or runoff spot. Then you've got trees on either side. And the trees, and this is where the forest really comes into play. The trees are actually, they've been planted. And so they're in rows. Now, they're kind of tight rows. They're very close together. The trees are maybe 4-5 feet tall, right up against the gully slash empty area. And they get a little bit bigger, up to about 6 feet as they go further in. And they're planted in really tight rows, so they're maybe a foot from each other fat. So this has probably been an area that's already been forested at some point, and then they went back in and replanted it. So we're carrying things out of the vehicle. It's the middle of the night. I had just woken up, and we're walking down this sloped, hilly area, and it's still kind of just very steep in the middle around this little runoff area, some open grassy area around it, and then the trees. Now, as it narrows toward the bottom, it kind of turns a little bit, and we're carrying things, and it's heavy, and it's pretty late at night, and so we can't see that good. But for whatever reason, we decided to go ahead and go through with what we're doing. And so we get to the point where it starts to turn. The open area starts to turn a little bit, and it's still going down at the same time. And a friend of mine goes, "What is that thing?" Then they're looking ahead and they're looking to my left, and I'm facing downward. And I look up and it's also to my left, and I see this being standing there, just standing. And I'm not really sure what I'm looking at. It is an all white being. And it's standing behind a smaller bunch of trees, and these trees are probably about, to give you some context, they're a type of pine tree. I think it's a long leaf pine needle tree, so they get kind of really bushy on the ends, and they look like little bushes when they're small. And so it's standing behind some of those. The tallest tree in that little stand was probably not more than 4 feet, so it wasn't necessarily trying to hide. It was definitely watching us. Now, how long it had been watching us, I don't know. As far as how far it came above the tallest tree, probably not more than 6 feet, maybe just shy of that by a few inches. And from the best I could tell, it's a solid white entity, and it's completely not smooth, but it looked smooth on all sides, almost like a sheet-like effect. So my mind was thinking and racing, trying to think of what it could be. And obviously, you know, I'm thinking person playing a joke, ghost, apparition, whatever. And then I realized it had two eyes. And when I looked at the eyes and when I looked into its eyes, I actually locked eyes with it, and I realized that it was actually a creature, being, a living, breathing being. And its eyes were all dark, but they did reflect back some light. And the light they reflected back was like an amberish color, like an orangish amber color. And the best I can remember is that it didn't have whites on its eyes like you and I have. Its eyes almost looked like it had two irises, I think is what it's called. Or two of the center part of your eye and none of the white part of your eye, if that makes sense. But it definitely looked like it had a round part and then an outer round part, both of which were reflecting light. And then the outside part of it, which was also dark. And I locked eyes with it for quite a few seconds. And it didn't do anything. It didn't speak. It didn't move. There were no visible body parts that I could see. No arms, no feet, no nothing, no hands. And it didn't move, really, toward us or anything. No sounds. The only thing that it did do was it turned silently, smoothly, in almost a gliding type fashion to my left and walked very quietly away. I don't know if it was maybe trying to assess us. That's always been my assumption, is that it was trying to assess us and see if we were a threat. And it kind of gets weirder from there, because when we get to the actual campsite, now remember, this is like a locals campsite and they know where it's located and they go there all the time. But there are all these, probably the largest trees I've seen in the area. These trees are probably a good 15, 20 feet high. And when I say they're several feet wide, they are. And there are what I can only describe as a catwalk above us, but it's made with solid tree trunks. And it goes from one tree to second tree to third tree, maybe even a fourth. And then there's a wide open area. And then one tree is big enough that you could actually go inside it if you wanted to. I should also mention there was like a creek nearby that had like fish and things in it. I didn't know anything about Sasquatch when I went on this trip. Sasquatch to me was an urban legend and almost kind of like a joke, because having never seen one before, I had no reason to think they existed or didn't exist. I didn't know what I thought. But as I walked around that campsite the next few days, the feeling of uneasiness grew. But you could also smell a skunk-like odor in the air at times. And if you would go and walk down to one of the other smaller trails nearby, now these were just through these pre-planted trees. And these trees had been there a while, but the trail that was through them was almost intelligent, because it was straight through the widest part between these pre-planted trees, like a pre-designated trail, pre-planned, whatever. Something was actively using those trails. And that's where I would pick up on this smell of like a skunk-like odor oftentimes. And without even really knowing anything about Sasquatch, which of course now I know that people associate that smell with him, I kind of got a sense of warning, like maybe I shouldn't go down some of these trails. And I'd always turn back if I smelled that. And that was only a few times out of a couple of days of being there. But definitely there were times when you felt like you were being watched. I don't know where that's located to go back there. And I'm not sure I'd want to go back there now if I could. And I don't know that people still use that area. But like I said, the sighting of the animal itself, and then of course, if it had wanted to do anything, it could have, but it never did. And then to see what appeared to be structures, not like something I've ever heard of or seen since. Trees laid end to end between other trees, forming a catwalk above what was underneath those trees. And I've never heard of anything like that before, nor seen anything since. I did not, unfortunately, have a camera on me to take pictures of that, because it would seem almost unbelievable. If I hadn't seen it myself and someone was telling me that story, I'd probably still find it hard to believe. That's my first encounter with a Sasquatch. It took me months, if not years after that happened, to process that that's probably what that was, in lots of research. Apparently seeing a white one is not something that's really normal in the Sasquatch community. And so I believe it was an older Sasquatch or Bigfoot, an older being and it just didn't want to be messed with, and it just wanted its peace and quiet and be left alone. Now, as for the second one, if any of you have watched or listened to the other show, my second encounter with Bigfoots happened in the valley, which just so happened to be in a missing 411 area. Only we didn't know that until after I got home. Now, this fast forward from 2006 to 2022, and we're in a valley, and I did not know that it was a missing 411 area. As a matter of fact, since we left that area, I found out that there was at least one missing person who went missing sometime in September or October in that area, and they're still missing. They never found them. That's the second encounter I had. By this time, of course, I'm a full-blown Bigfoot believer. And again, with that encounter, they were not violent. I've read accounts where people have said Bigfoot could be telepathic or this or that, and I've kind of been like, well, I don't know about that. That's the same encounter where I was looking at a rock in the middle of this river that I was standing beside that was just 1,000 yards or so from where we were staying. And I kept looking at it and going, this would make a great gifting rock. Well, that was making no sense to me. And then when I sat down, I was just enjoying the view of the river and the peace and the quiet. That's when I noticed that there were beings across the river. And, you know, I've heard people say this before, and it's kind of true. There was a power line in the woods across the river from us and a access road that went up to it. And I don't know if they're attracted to the open space because it's an easy way to move, because there might be people nearby. Maybe they're observing it. Maybe they can sense some of the electrical components of the power lines, and maybe it's a force field for them. I don't know. But I have heard that said about other people that when they were out in the woods, that those were things that they would often find Bigfoot around. Sure enough, when I looked across the river, which isn't too big, we're talking a good 8-10 feet wide, but it's also really shallow. So it's kind of like a larger creek, small river. It's clipping along very, very fast. You know, I wouldn't have any way to gauge how fast it was moving, but fast enough that I wouldn't get in. And I saw these creatures on the other side. You know, they would be hiding in the shadow underneath a tree or sitting and watching. And I kept telling myself, you know, you've listened to too many of these podcasts, you've read too many stories, and you might be making this up in your mind. And it was when I was watching one of them that it literally stood up and walked very fast, actually, to my left again. And then I could see it had all black fur. That's when I realized, oh, I actually am seeing something here. Solid black fur. And it was very glossy, very shiny. It didn't look dirty. It looked very well kept, very healthy hair for an animal to have. So we left not too far after, long after that. What made that event really special was when we got up and walked down the river to look at something, maybe a few feet, probably not more than 20 feet away. Mind you, we never heard anything nor saw anything. When I came back, a gifted item had been left on the rock between the two seats where we were sitting. And if anyone remembers, that gifted item just so happened to be a round, circular hair tie. Now, I wouldn't have even considered anything about that, because sometimes when you're sitting somewhere, you'll see things, or you won't see things, and then when you come back, you will, just because you're not paying attention. But there was a wet hand mark on a knuckle drag mark that was quite big on the rock. And I would say that knuckle drag mark was an inch and a half wide. Then it looked like something crossed the river and sat something with an open hand on there and then went back. It was after that that we saw them moving, and then we left because, you know, we weren't sure of their intentions. The next day is when we walked down the river through what we think was a portal and all the weird things that happened with that. That's important for this story because there were actually Bigfoot. We got to a point in the river where we stopped, and we have pictures of it, and there are giant, huge Bigfoot. And they're all gray. The biggest one was gray and black, very white on the top of its body and chest, like you'd see a traditional mountain gorilla, and it looked very gorilla-like. The rest of its hair that it had seemed to be dark gray or black in color and very, very muscular. Well-defined arms, the best that I could compare it to would be a giant mountain gorilla. And sitting in the sun, not unlike they would when they want to get sun, eat, socialize, whatever they're going to do. And there were other apes around it, or great apes, Sasquatch. And they were all pretty sizable. I would say the chest on this thing, just from where we saw it, I wouldn't be surprised if the chest were a couple of feet wide. And the facial structure on it is it did have a neck, but it was very short. Very well-defined chest. It definitely had a muscle structure, just like you'd see a gorilla in the wild. And its face was covered in fur, with the front part of it being dark skin, like a dark color to the skin. No hair on that, on the front face part, but it definitely went all the way up to its scalp and around its face, underneath its chin, and around its ear area. Now, the ears, I don't remember too much about them. I think they kind of resembled a little bit like ours, but not exactly. A little bit. But the facial structure was definitely very much like a gorilla to me. That's the only thing that I can compare that to. Any other beings that I saw there that might have been ape-like kind of varied in what they looked like from that, I would say, the biggest ape of them all that was just sitting there, sunning himself. Some of them looked more like him, and some of them looked less like him. And that's kind of like the only way that I could describe that to you would be if you had a human evolution chart, it would be from this part of the human evolution chart to this part. Would it be a full caveman? No, it's still going to be very ape-like. But to me, the greatest changes would be the body being either taller and lankier, or shorter and not as lanky, or the facial structure, which would change from being more of like an elongated face. Like a longer face, if you look at it from the front, longer. And I guess you would say more of like a conical head shape and like a longer nose, but the eyes are closer set, longer nose area. No real definable mouths on these guys, like not like a lips or mouth structure that you or I would have probably, which is not to say they didn't have it. It just, if they did, it wasn't very well defined like it would be on a human. Some of them appeared to have, best that I can tell, kind of an in-between height of the taller, lankier, and the shorter. Kind of an in-between height between those two. When I say tall and lanky, they're probably close to 8 feet. The biggest one did not stand up. I wouldn't be surprised if he was a 10-foot. I would not. The shorter ones are shorter than those, but they're still not really that short. They'd probably be closer to about 6 feet. And they seem to have a slightly different facial structure, being more like shorter face, and the face is not as elongated and it's more squished. But still very not human, as far as I could tell. Very much an ape-like quality to it. And that's just the body hair, the muscular structure, the eye color, which is, to best that I could tell for all of them, was just a brown color or something in the brown family. Height, just the gait, just the ability to move that quickly. And they can move very quickly. They can move faster than you or I can. The fastest human being, I think they could probably move faster than that. They're very agile. They were climbing up whole mountains while we were out there, like it was nothing. And so that's the second encounter we had. And if anyone would remember, we did gift them back when we left that area, the portal area, and we came back through. I left a gift because I felt compelled to. We came back. I don't recall seeing or hearing any others for the rest of that trip, but we did stay away from the river. I don't think we really wanted to push our luck as far as that goes with the creatures and the area and what was going on. Now, regarding other animals I've seen, I have seen Bigfoot on film. Now, this would be my friend's footage. I don't want to disclose too much about her, so I'll just say she does a lot of Bigfoot outings in the state of Florida. She does a lot of live streams from the state of Florida. I just so happened to be sitting in on a live stream one day in which she was actually out Bigfooting. And a Bigfoot is on the live stream. And if you've ever watched a live stream or been in the woods with these guys or seen them at all, you know that they don't want you to know they're there unless they choose to show you that. And people will say, well, you haven't seen that many in person. No, I haven't, but I've seen hundreds on my friends' photos and live streams. And I picked up on that from those because I would see them on her film. She would be there in real life and not see anything. And so we have to go over these things and review a lot of hundreds of hours of footage to find things. But it just so happened to be on this live, I watched one shadowing her through the forest. And there were a lot of things going on at the same time. Other creatures, other beings, things that were standing up, things that were in trees, things that came out of the mist. The Bigfoot followed her, shadowed her along the way she was walking, got to a tree, peeked around the corner of the tree, and like a light that flickers before it goes off, it flickered once, twice, and then went out. It just completely went invisible. So that's my experience with them cloaking and seeing it. No, I wouldn't say firsthand, but seeing it on a live stream and realizing they can, in fact, turn invisible. They can, in fact, cloak. I knew that before I went on my trip in 2022. So that footage was probably from 2021. And I've known since then because I could see it actually flicker and then go out. And it peaked. You know, you could see two eyes, the top of its head, its face, and then it flickered and went out. And again, that's not a situation where they weren't really necessarily in any direct danger. It's more of a situation, more often than not, where I see, especially with Sasquatch involved, that they don't want to be in your way or around you. They'll go out of their way to be not in the same space you're in. They will leave the area or they'll follow you. Sometimes I think they follow because you are really close to their home and they just want to make sure that you're not going to come in there and do something to interfere with their home. I've seen hundreds on her film footage, photos, film, lives. So I kind of have a good idea of what they look like now where I didn't before. Definitely the apes, the North American great apes on the Eastern seaboard are a different size and look different than the ones on the West Coast. They're smaller, and they have a little bit of a different stature to them, a little bit of a different coloring. I'd argue that the ones on the East Coast are a little bit more friendly than the ones on the West Coast, just off accounts that I've read up of and listened to. The West Coast Bigfoots are massive. And since my experience was on the West Coast with the second one, they're massive. They're huge. But the ones on the East Coast, they don't top out at 10. They don't even top out at 8 foot, I don't think. I think the biggest we've probably seen has been 6 foot, close to that. So it's important the people would know that just for when you're out in the woods, you hear something or you see something for your knowledge, but also to know that the vast majority of these beings or these creatures are not out there to hurt you. If anything, they want to avoid you. They don't want anything to do with us. They're out there doing a lot of weird things. Some of it would seem impossible if we were to have a whole discussion about that. Some of it would seem highly unlikely. And whatever they're doing, they don't want you to know about, and they don't want you to see it, and they don't want you to be any part of it. They don't want any part with human beings. And people need to know that. And be respectful when you're going out in the woods, and please don't go out in the woods and think that you're going to try to kill one of these beings or try to do that, because for the most part, they just want to be peaceful and live peacefully alongside us and live their lives, and they don't want to be hunted.
You came on episode 440 of Dogman Encounters, Miri, and told us about your Dogman encounters, but as if that wasn't enough, you've had these Sasquatch experiences. What have all these experiences with dogmen and Sasquatch done to your interest in camping?
I don't camp anymore. I'll go in the woods. I don't camp anymore. Let me put it the best way I know how. There's too much overlap of certain phenomenon with these beings, these creatures in the woods, for my comfort level. And if it was just me, maybe I wouldn't care. But, you know, I have family to think about now. I have a dog I'd like to come home to, so I don't want anything to happen to me accidentally or intentionally or whatever. So I don't camp because I don't want something to happen, because either I don't know what's going on around me exactly, or, you know, I do something dumb and I don't. It's just a choice. I'd rather leave some of those things that are going on in the woods well enough alone. They're going to do what they're going to do. I want no part in it.
It's more to do with the fact that dogmen are out there or Sasquatch that you made that decision.
If I had to say who's capable of doing more paranormal things, we'll say, definitely Sasquatch. Dogman, I don't know. My thought process on it is I just should just stay out of the woods camping. I go out there and spend a few hours maybe hiking around or looking, as long as it's close to civilization. But for the most part, I stay away because I've seen too much, things I can't explain. And I've seen a lot of things that people have only hinted at or written about in old myths and legends and things. And so, you know, again, I don't want to do something that's going to cause something to happen to me if I don't understand what I'm getting myself into fully.
Well, I can understand your reservations. I just hope I've never come to that. You described the first Sasquatch you saw as being solid white. Did it have hair on his face, too?
Yes, actually. There was no visible face, just eyes. And you could kind of see a little bit of like a bridge of a nose. But the face was totally covered in just long, long, long white hair. The whole body was covered in long white hair.
I always wondered about that. Making a living the way they do in the forest, how they can hide effectively from game, but maybe that one could cloak as well, and that's how it feeds itself. I don't know.
I couldn't say. Some people have speculated that because of the Bigfoot hair structure, that has something to do with how they can cloak. And yeah, that's probably a really good idea. It's probably not everything that contributes to their ability to cloak, but they're probably not going to tell you that secret anytime real soon, and the only way we'd find out is if we killed one, and even then that's maybe just a possibility that we'd find out then, and I wouldn't advocate for trying to kill or trap these things, so I guess it'll just remain a mystery for me.
Yeah, I don't see there being any future in trying to kill these guys. Yeah, that definitely wouldn't be a good move. When you realized it had eyes and locked eyes with it, you said that it didn't move toward you, but did its demeanor seem to change?
No, it didn't really seem to be anything, really. The only feeling I got from it was that it was more or less kind of just evaluating us to see if we were going to be a threat. And for whatever reason, it deemed that we weren't, and it turned away and went about its night, evening, whatever it was doing.
Back off to do whatever Sasquatch do. How far were you from your campsite where you had that sighting?
It's really hard to say, but at the halfway point, and I'm, you know, it was late at night and this was 2006, so I couldn't say how far it was from where we parked to the campsite, but I would say we probably didn't walk more than a fourth of a mile, probably. I don't even think it was quite that far. So it would have been about the halfway point between the two.
Yeah, that's pretty close to your camp then. Knowing that it was out there, did you have any problems sleeping after that experience?
Oh, not really, because I was young and pretty dumb at that point, and I think we drank a lot of alcohol on that trip, so I was... that played heavily into just going to bed and not thinking about anything at that point.
Yeah, that definitely would help to get some Z's, so I get it. Talking about the trees that had been used to make structures, had they been uprooted or just broken off?
I think best I can remember is that like the root structure on the bottom was left intact, but the top seemed to be broken off because I didn't see any branches, and it kind of just seemed to be laying up there on top of another tree, which also seemed to kind of have some of the branches rearranged or ripped out so that it could be laid up there. It's just very odd.
You did say that that was on that trip where you saw those structures, correct?
Yes, that was the 2006 trip. I've not heard or seen anything similar to that since.
Okay, good. I thought that's what you'd said. When you had your second sighting, you said that you saw other creatures before the black ones stood up and started walking away. How many creatures do you think you saw that day, though?
That I saw, four, five, six, easily four or five, a couple that I'm not sure if I did see or didn't see when I checked the photographs, which I won't release because I absolutely don't want these beings harmed in this area, harmed in any way. But when I go back and check the photographs, there's so many things in the photographs that'll make your skin crawl. So if you're not super comfortable with this kind of thing, don't go back and check the photographs maybe and look super close, because you will see things in there that maybe you didn't see when you were there, and it will absolutely creep you out. And that's what happened to me, which I've already been doing this for a few years anyway, doing the analyzing of photographs and things, but it still creeped me out because obviously you're right there. You don't see it. And for something to be so close to you that it could reach out and touch you, and you don't see it until you get home, and you're like, wow. So could they have hurt us? You know, if they had a malicious intent, absolutely they could have, but they didn't. And so that's my takeaway. What I choose to take away from all these experiences is if it's not harming me, then there isn't any reason for me to try to harm it back or have any negative intent toward it.
I like the way you think. Yeah, like you said, they could have hurt you at any time, but they didn't, so that shows their intentions.
That should also be another thing that I could just jump in here really quick and say is that a lot of people want to separate Bigfoot and Dogman. Well, that day I saw Bigfoot and Dogman at the same time. And when I tell you Dogman doesn't always look exactly like what you think he looked like, he doesn't always look like what you think he should exactly look like. Sometimes he kind of looks a little bit different, a little bit shorter and stockier, but with a dog-like face. And in the photos and videos I've analyzed with my friend, Dogmen are absolutely in those photos and videos, and they are helping Sasquatch, and they work side by side. And so the urban myth or legend that's kind of going around that the two don't intermix or that they're out there in the forest having massive cryptid fights, maybe in some places, but for the most part, what I've seen is that's not the norm. That's the exception. They're helping each other, and it has to do with, I think the Sasquatches help the mother dogman and vice versa. And I think it has to do with survival of the species and things, and maybe it's a thing that they've always done, and maybe it's something that they've done in more recent times, but they absolutely do help each other.
It sure makes you wonder when a group of Sasquatch comes across a group of dogmen, or maybe one Sasquatch runs into one dogman. It really makes you wonder how that plays out. I'm sure it would vary. Sometimes it would play out well and no problems, and other times not so much so.
Yeah, I think it has to do with if it's like two alpha males. Maybe not so much, but absolutely, I do think they communicate, and best I can tell is it's a female Sasquatch helping the female dogman. So maybe that's got something to do with it. I'm not really sure.
It just might. You never know. Why do you think it is that they left that gift for you when you never had interacted with them before?
I think it was a test. I think because we'd already sat there and I thought I saw something across the river, and I basically told them, we have no evil intent towards you. We're not here to harm you or damage this beautiful place or take anything away. We're just here to sit. And it was after we got up and moved to go look at something and then came back. That's when we found the gift. And I think it was a test for us to see if we would accept the gift, because accepting the gift would mean that we accepted them. And at that point in time, I wasn't going to not accept the gift because I didn't want to be insulting or however they're going to view that. I didn't want to do that. And we absolutely left a gift in return that day, which I had forgotten that we did. We left 3 rocks. And when we went back the next day, of course, only 2 rocks were taken. They just so happened to be the 2 rocks that I picked out, which I think is weird because I'm the one who always has the paranormal experiences. And did they pick up on that with me? And is that why they chose to show themselves? Because they could have just stayed completely hidden. I would have never even known they were there.
Yeah, that just might be why they showed themselves. It's hard to say. I guess we're never going to know. You left that group a gift because you said you felt compelled to do that. Do you have any regrets about doing that, though?
No, actually, I don't, because at that point going forward, I really feel like they were protective almost of us at that point. Because I am part Native American, and I have read up on some of the ancient legends, and to a certain extent, I almost feel like it was a test that we had to pass. And I think maybe we did pass it, because at that point in time, I really felt like we were protected by them, and they were watching over us and kind of protecting that area that we were living in when we were on vacation staying there. And I think that they were.
Yeah, sounds like an all-around good relationship you had with them. Thank goodness for that. You said that huge gray and black Sasquatch had gorilla-like features. Did he ever do anything that gave you the impression of great intelligence?
This goes back to pictures I took and some things I saw. I actually saw what looked like a rudimentary form of writing on some of these rocks. And what I can tell you is it looks like it was kind of chipped into the rocks. So did he give me a direct sense that he was intelligent? No, because he actually just looked like he was a big, happy gorilla sitting there just doing his thing. But it made me wonder who had maybe chipped these what looked like runes into these rocks. And also, we did find the carved axe head, which was kind of like a flint-napped axe head. And the axe head did change from one day to the next day, from a smaller axe head to a bigger one. So I absolutely do think they're capable of making tools and things like that. Are they capable of some kind of communication? I'm not sure, at least written communication. I'm sure they're capable of telepathic communication and communicating in other ways, sure. Written, I don't know. But he didn't give me the vibe that he was super smart or not super smart or anything. He just looked like a happy gorilla just sitting there in the sun, sunning himself and doing what he wanted to do.
Sitting out there enjoying the day, having a great time.
Exactly.
Nothing wrong with that. But having said that, Mary, it's about time for us to get out of here. But before we do, I just want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing those experiences with us. I really appreciate it.
Oh, anytime. But only for you, Vic. Again, I don't do this for the fame and the money or anything. You know, I just want people to realize that a lot more of these experiences that people are having out there are actually valid experiences, and that we need to consider these things. And if someone's coming forward with a story or an experience, we need to take it into consideration and not be as easily dismissive of everything as a lot of people in the field tend to be.
More people than we're ever going to know have experiences with these guys. They just don't put it out there, so obviously I'm so glad when people like you decide to come forward and do that, so yeah, I can't thank you enough, but having said that, thanks again so much for your time, and have a great night.
That's it for another episode of Bigfoot Eyewitness Radio with Vic Cundiff. If you've had a Sasquatch encounter and would like to be a guest on the show, please go to BigfootEyewitness.com and submit a report. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. Have a great night.